Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
China, home of Mao Zedong, the Chinese Communist Party, the Cultural Revolution, and the Great Leap Forward. Explain to me then how this became the Great Mall of China. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Gather.com, where you can read what other listeners are saying and thinking about today's business news. You can share your perspective online at gather.com. Marketplace China reports are supported by Best Buy, building a global network to help enrich lives through technology, innovation, and opportunity. Best Buy.
Live from Chongqing in the People's Republic of China, I'm Kai Rizdal. Today is Wednesday, January 18th, at least where you are. I'm in the future. The calendar's already flipped to Thursday here in China. It is a five-minute walk from my hotel to Marketplace East here at the World Trade Center. And in those 2.5 blocks, there are probably 65 places selling just about anything you want. Flowers, an Armani suit, or a bucket full of sheep hearts. Or I could just jump on the monorail and head over to Walmart. There, up on the second floor, I might as well be back home. I can get a DVD player or a throw rug or a cheap winter coat. A Walmart is a Walmart is a Walmart, after all. Except that it's not. Downstairs, in the supermarket area, I'm back in China, where fresh means alive. If you want a fish, you scoop it out of the tank, hand it to the guy, he kills it, descales it, and gives it back to you. He's got bullfrogs and turtles, too. Over in the deli, you can get a pound of ground pork or a whole animal carcass.
These are yang, right?
Goat, I discover. Walmart has been in China for 9 years. There are 52 stores in all now, but it's taken them a while to find their footing. Their low, low prices still aren't low enough for most Chinese. And rich Chinese just don't want to buy no-name Walmart stuff. There are 1.3 billion people in this country. And the theory goes, if you can sell one of anything to each of them, you're doing pretty well. But there's a catch. You have to know what they're going to buy, why they're going to buy it, and who they're going to buy it from. In the States, you flip a switch, the light comes on. You mail a letter, it gets where it's going. You buy something online, a week later it shows up. And so we all keep mailing letters and shopping online. Here, well, you never know what's going to happen. Face-to-face transactions are the norm, with cash on the barrelhead. Marketplace's Nate DeMeo discovered one Beijing company that's adapting modern commerce to local conditions.
Peggy Yu needed something to keep her CDs organized. So she logged on to the e-commerce site DongDong.com.
There are 39 CD holders. This is a cool one.
She picked out a couple that looked like they'd do the trick. They just showed up at her office. One's pretty nice. It fits 100 discs. It's compact. It's tasteful. But the other one, well, it was supposed to look like a Coke can, but she thinks it looks more like a trash can. It looked cool on the website.
And I see here, to me, it looks strange. We all make mistakes, and some mistakes are just dumber than others.
Peggy Yu is not just an unsatisfied customer. She's an unsatisfied CEO. She and her husband Li Guoqing started DongDong.com 6 years ago after they moved back to China from the States. Peggy had worked in finance there for 12 years. And she missed some things from her time in New York.
You walk into Barnes & Noble, you walk into Saks Fifth Avenue, and the goods are displayed in very organized manner. Consumers could always find what they're looking for. And in Chinese stores, things are kind of chaotic. And in many cities, the stores are very small and consumers couldn't find a large selection. So I thought internet will be a good storefront.
There are somewhere around 100 million Chinese internet users. But when Dangdang started, there were only 300,000. The online retail market had to be built from scratch.
China never had a history of mail order business. So it's a great leap forward to jump from shopping in the stores that you see people face to face to purchase something on the internet from someone you never see their face, never see their goods before.
Chinese do not trust that products are going to work.
As head of the Northeast Asia division of the marketing firm J. Walter Thompson, Tom Doktoroff makes his living finding ways to sell to the Chinese.
We have to remember that China is still suffering the lingering after effects of a command economy. And in fact, a lot of the products that they do buy still are pumped out of state-owned factories like cheese. People do want demonstration of reliability.
That usually means literally. Buy a DVD player at a mall in China, and the clerk won't let you leave until he's plugged it into the wall, played a DVD, and proved that indeed that thing in the unopened shrink wrap box from Sony actually works. But over time, a good reputation, a lot of consumer education, and a generous return policy have helped customers get over that cultural barrier and buy stuff at Dangdang. Actually, one of those customers just bought a lot of stuff.
I'm looking at this one from like Fujian province. This guy bought 18 items all over the map. Army watch, blank Sony DV memory stick, some kind of oxygen-making device.
She says since they expanded beyond books and DVDs over a year ago, more and more of Dangdang's business is selling household products to people in small cities and villages who can't find them where they live. The wonders of the new Chinese consumer society haven't quite extended to every spot on the map.
Nail clipper for the people born in the year of rat. Nail clipper for the people born in the year of rabbit.
She says it's very hard to keep on top of the needs and desires of her customers. Everything changes so fast here. And she says each of China's 30 provinces is so distinct, it's like doing business in 30 different countries at once. But she says there's one thing that unifies shoppers here.
Chinese consumers are extremely price sensitive. You see Carrefour make a promotion announcement. Their large bottle of Coca-Cola will be 10 cents less expensive than someone else. You see people just ride on the bus for 40 minutes to get that cheap bottle of Coca-Cola.
So the challenge for any Chinese retailer, and maybe especially for one like Dangdang trying to get consumers to change centuries-old shopping practices, is keeping prices low. In a cold warehouse about an hour from the Beijing office, dozens of kids in their teens and 20s are bundled up against the cold. For about 10 hours a day, they push shopping carts through a maze of shelves, pausing every now and then to check off a list. Other kids can see their breath as they pack and tape up boxes. And from this drafty warehouse, a million packages a month will spread out to Dangdang customers from penthouse apartments in Shanghai to tiny farmhouses in the Himalayas. Each shipped at the low, low price of...
It's RMB 5 flat.
5 RMB flat. So that means it costs 61 cents to send anything bought on Dangdang to anywhere in China, whether it's a couple blocks down the road in Beijing or a couple of thousand miles to the far western border with Kazakhstan. 61 cents. It's shocking.
It is shocking. And a lot of our DVD are sold for RMB, say, 3 to 5. That's also like 60 cents per DVD. Things are just that cheap here.
Which makes it sound easy, right? Go online, find what you want to buy, click on the shopping cart, get out your credit card. Oh, wait a second.
Credit usage in China is still very low, so we have to figure out a way to get money.
Only 14% of people in the world's fastest growing economy has a credit card. Fact is, there are still hundreds of millions of poor Chinese. But Peggy Yu says there's also a sort of cultural reluctance here to getting a credit card. People aren't that comfortable just paying someone they've never met and trusting that they'll get what they paid for. They'd rather pay when they get the stuff. Andy Rothman studies the Chinese economy for the financial firm CLSA Securities.
People here are very entrepreneurial, so they're finding a way around the problem. For example, you get online and order some books. If you don't have a credit card, the bookseller sends a guy over to your house on a bicycle who picks up the cash and gives you the books.
John Yuling is one of those guys. He works for a delivery company in a city of about 2 million people called Wuxi. He starts every shift by personally calling up everyone who's set to get a Dangdang package from him that day. If they're home, and they promise to be at home when he gets there, he'll throw their package onto the back of a rickety, half-man-powered, half-electric bicycle and ride off to make his rounds. Once he finds the address, he waits while the customer opens up his package to make sure it's right. Customer hands him the cash. At the end of the day, Zhang Yuling will turn the money from all his deliveries in, and the company will wire it back to Dangdang in Beijing. This delivery went smoothly. Sometimes, he has to keep coming back to the same address several times a day, even try to track someone down at work to make the exchange.
It's really upset when the customer is not available. Not until I deliver the goods to him, I will not get my 2.7 RMB.
That means he gets just shy of 30 cents for every delivery he makes. He can string together about 150 bucks worth of deliveries in a month. Economists say much of the phenomenal growth of the Chinese economy is owed to the cheap labor of people like Zhang Yuling. So despite all the extra steps and moving parts, this cash-on-delivery system works well for a company like Dangdang.
I came late. Last week, this place is stuffed with flowers because it was one of our anniversary day and vendors sending a lot of flowers.
There are a lot more people in Dangdang's Beijing office than there were when it started 6 years ago with Peggy Yuyu, her husband, and a handful of employees. There are now a couple of hundred people working here, and the CEO says they have a lot to celebrate.
We are changing the buying behavior and consumption behavior of millions of Chinese. We are starting something really from scratch, and that's very exciting.
And she's even thinking about going back to New York, this time taking Dangdang to Wall Street as a splashy NASDAQ IPO. In Beijing, I'm Nate DeMeo for Marketplace.
Top story in today's China Daily, that's China's leading English language newspaper, is the meeting between China's President Hu Jintao and North Korean leader Kim Jong-il, this after a couple of days of speculation about the whereabouts of the Korean leader. But let's take a minute to check some of the top stories of the day elsewhere in the world. The cost of living over here in China isn't so bad for a foreigner, but inflation is taking a big bite out of your wallet. In Washington today, the Labor Department announced consumer prices jumped 3.4% last year. That's the biggest increase in 5 years. You can blame at least some of that on higher prices at the gas station and in the supermarket checkout line. And paychecks just aren't keeping up. When you factor in inflation, hourly wages in the U.S. actually fell 0.5% last year on average. There is a very real human cost to the development and growth that's happening here in China. This past weekend, a 13-year-old girl was killed during a protest in the southern part of the country. Eyewitnesses say she was beaten to death by police. Demonstrations like that one over land use and how villagers are compensated when their farms and homes are taken are the backstory to much of China's economic boom. Marketplace's Beijing Bureau Chief Jocelyn Ford is with us. Hello, Jocelyn.
Hi, Kai.
Jocelyn, let's tell folks exactly where you are and where this protest has been happening.
I am in Jiangshan City, which is across the border from Hong Kong. It's an area where there are a lot of factories, a lot of development going on. And the price of land here has been going up, in part because people from Hong Kong are also coming across the border, buying houses. They find the lifestyle here better and cheaper.
This isn't the only protest that's been happening in China the past couple of months. You've covered some of them for us. Why is this one different, though?
One of the interesting things about this one is that the protesters actually consulted with a lawyer who advised them on civil disobedience. He said, okay, you guys do a slow march down the road. You can block traffic for 2 hours, but don't block it the whole day. They just wanted to get more compensation. $100 a year is what they're getting now for the land that's gone off to developers. They want $150 a year. And they didn't want to push the envelope too much, but they wanted to push it enough to get attention from the central government.
We've been covering all week on the program, Jocelyn, China's booming economy and how crazy the growth here is and how many people are making money, sometimes lots of it. But I think it's important to point out that not everybody's enjoying the fruits of that boom.
Well, interestingly enough, the villager I spoke with, he took the risk of speaking to the media. He could get in trouble for this, but one of his points was that he is so deeply disturbed by the gap between rich and poor, and he's doing okay himself. He's earning about $1,200 a month to $2,400 a month, which is not bad. But he says his neighbors and he's got friends who are having problems sending their kids to school. It costs $500 to send a kid to junior high school, and they simply can't afford this, and he does not like to see the gap. He says there's no medical care. He is putting his uncle into the hospital. He's paying for it, because otherwise he would be like other farmers, and his uncle would probably have to die. He could not afford medical care. He said no health care, no pension. These are huge problems.
Jocelyn, explain to us for a second exactly how large a scale we're talking about here of people who've been left behind by the economic boom.
Well, I think it's important to keep it in perspective, though. A lot of people's lives are getting better. They're improving, but they're not improving as fast as the wealthiest in the cities, and especially the local corrupt government is a huge problem, as many people see it. And I asked this villager, he said his life is so much better than his parents' generation, but he's not sure his kids' life will be better than his. He said that'll depend on whether they can get a good education, and not all of his neighbors can afford a good education for their kids. And I think that's what we're seeing. We're seeing the gap is growing, and people feel like they're being left behind even as their lives get better.
Marketplace's Beijing Bureau Chief Jocelyn Ford. She's with us in Zhongshan City. Thanks, Jocelyn.
Thank you, Kai.
Coming up, niche marketing.
In infant formula products, there are about 130 companies in China. In vitamins, there's over 1,250 companies. In toys, there's over 8,000 companies.
But first, let's do the numbers. Everybody's hurting today, starting with Tokyo. The stock market there halted trading 20 minutes before the close because a massive tech sell-off was about to crash its creaky computers. The company behind the panic was Livedoor, a Japanese internet powerhouse. Authorities raided Livedoor's headquarters on Monday. They've been checking its books since. Livedoor's fall brought a whole mess of tech stocks with it. The entire Nikkei lost 464 points, or nearly 3%, before trading was stopped. That trouble reverberated through other Asian markets in Europe and met some sympathetic vibration in the States. Yesterday, chipmaker Intel announced fourth quarter earnings that were, shall we say, terrible. Intel stock fell a stunning 11% today. Yahoo announced bad numbers too and lost nearly 12%. Rising oil prices helped send the Dow Industrials down 41 points, a third of a percent, to close at 10,855. The NASDAQ surrendered 23 points, 1%, and finished at 2279. The S&P 500 lost just 5 points, 0.3%, ending at 1277. China's Shanghai Composite does its own thing, though. Shanghai gained 24 points, 2%, to close at 12,033. Bonds fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 4.33%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Since 1937, managing money with a focus on consistent results over the long term. Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Marketplace China reports are supported by Best Buy, building a global network to help enrich lives through technology, innovation, and opportunity. Best Buy. The Marketplace Entrepreneurship Desk is supported by the Kauffman Foundation of Kansas City, the foundation of entrepreneurship, on the web at kauffman.org. Marketplace is broadcasting live from China all this week. If you want to find out more, drop by our website. You'll find exclusive online features, including slideshows, a staff blog, and an interview with the musicians who created the Chinese version of our theme music. It's all at www.marketplace.org.
Here's a look at the special China edition of the Marketplace Datebook. The announcement in 2001 that Beijing will host the 2008 Olympics resulted in an explosion of new construction. The China Daily says construction accounts for one-fifth of nearly 2 million jobs created for the preparations. Even historic sites like the Forbidden City and the Great Wall are getting a facelift. It's all happening so fast, the International Olympic Committee advised the enthusiastic hosts to slow down. That's probably a first. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal, and we are live this week from the World Trade Center in Chongqing, China. This city is not a glittering metropolis like Shanghai, 1,000 miles out to the east. Not yet. But that's what China's hoping for. So even though most foreign business people haven't even heard of this place, the smart money is on Chongqing and places like it. Just as crowded, just as chaotic, poorer though, and grittier. A couple of weeks ago, we sent our Jocelyn Ford out to profile one American company that's mastered China's toughest territory.
It's Saturday morning in a baby care playroom. A dozen toddlers waddle around on the bright purple and green foam floor. Moms and a few dads guide them through learning games, games that are good for babies' IQ and motor skill development. Like the Chinese version of head, shoulders, knees, and toes. Some of the classes are free. They're a sales ploy to get families to buy Baby Care's main money-making product, nutritional supplements. 33-year-old mom Li Qingchong says she brings 16-month-old Xuan Xuan to Baby Care activities to give her a head start.
Competition is so intense, I'm afraid she might not be able to compete with other kids, so I want to give her a good foundation.
She also buys DHA, the company's best-selling supplement. It's a substance found in fish, and doctors widely agree it's important for brain and eye development. Chinese families are famous for doting on their kids. After 25 years of the government's one-child policy, they dote even more.
We have four grandparents and two parents who are all focusing on this one child.
That's Baby Care founder Matthew Estes. He says families spend up to 40% of household income on their little one. Estes, formerly of San Diego, launched Baby Care 6 years ago. He figured doing something for the kitty market in China is a no-brainer. But just having a product people want isn't good enough to succeed.
In infant formula products, there are about 130 companies in China. In vitamins, there's over 1,250 companies. In toys, there's over 8,000 companies. And they're all doing generally the same thing.
Estes realized one way to beat the competition is to reach beyond the most prosperous cities like Shanghai, Beijing, and Guangzhou to what are called the second-tier cities. Estes' market research shows parents in cities like Chongqing have less to spend, but they spend a larger portion of their income on their kid.
In these second-tier cities, our costs are substantially lower. Rents are much lower, the advertising costs in building the business, but return on investment has in most cases been equal or better than the larger cities.
A case in point, Baby Care is in 16 cities but hasn't yet opened in Shanghai. The second tier cities are also where most of China's urban population lives, so consumer products that plan to do China have to succeed there. But some multinationals have had problems getting up to speed. Businessman Michael Burns is a veteran in China and serves on the board of the American Chamber of Commerce.
There's a surprising amount of wealth being created in second-tier cities, but it's not generally recognized by everyone.
The company management back home in the United States may only know the names of cities like Shanghai and Beijing. But oftentimes, the Chinese competition is getting a head start in the cities.
I think that many multinationals are caught off guard by how quickly indigenous companies have come up the value chain.
That's what happened in the dairy industry. Well, multinationals focused on the rich cities. Local Chinese milk companies sped off to the smaller ones. They sold more milk and were able to cut prices. Nestle's market share plummeted. Kraft, Unilever, and Danone pulled out. Chinese companies are hungrier. They're more willing to give up profit margin to get market share. And they're slimmer. They pay lower salaries and offer fewer benefits. They also are more aggressive about getting their product on the shelf. They'll pay bigger kickbacks if that's what it takes. Estes decided in this competitive battlefield, his advantage would be distinctive service and high quality. The key to his fast expansion is a sales force of 5,000 that sells directly to parents.
And we're finding in these second-tier cities that we get very high-quality salespeople.
And for a lot less. While many multinationals go for English-speaking employees, Estes avoids them. They're more expensive and more likely to job hop. Instead, he hires skilled people few Chinese companies will hire. Mothers, like star saleswoman Qi Yan. She was a schoolteacher until she had her own baby. Today, she's taking a public bus across the Yangtze River to hand-deliver nutritional supplements. Qi Yan makes home deliveries to her 100 customers several times a week. She's available by mobile phone 24/7 as a consultant for worried moms. To her, baby care is much more than just a job. It's a fulfilling profession.
Before I was a stay-at-home mom, I felt bored, taking care of my baby and waiting for my husband to come home every day. Now my life is more meaningful. I can help other mothers.
Her customer welcomes Qi Yan more like a favorite babysitter than a saleswoman.
Hey, hello.
Soon after arriving, she's playing baby care educational games with 2-year-old Xiao Qi. A most appreciative audience of parents and grandparents serve as the cheerleading squad. It's this kind of enthusiasm that's winning baby care loyalty. Loyalty that's helped make Estes the market leader in every city he's in. In Chongqing, I'm Jocelyn Ford for Marketplace.
All three Marketplace programs have been taking you all over the map of China the past few weeks. Beijing, sure, but also Chengdu, Shenzhen, and where I am right now in Chongqing. If you'd like to see how far we've traveled, and it is a ways, go to our website. It's marketplace.org. We've just posted an interactive story map. You can click on the little electronic pushpins and hear some stories about the people who live in those places.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
I took a walk last week through the pet market in Shanghai. It's an open warehouse that fills almost a whole city block over on Jiangyin Road. Locals go there to buy songbirds and cats and dogs and crickets. The market forces driving the cricket economy aren't apparent to the uninitiated Western traveler. So I asked the guy running one of the half dozen or so stalls how much a cricket would cost me.
30块吗？那不可能啊，30块。
He said about 20 kuai, almost $2.50. The one in the little plastic case next to it would cost me $3.60. That's about what it costs four people to have lunch over here. I asked him why one was so much more expensive than the other. What difference could there be? He said, just listen to its song. Next stall over was a businessman in a suit on his lunch break, about to spend $20 on a new handmade wooden cage. He said he's kept crickets for years, but needed a new summer cage. But summer's months from now, I said. He looked at me kind of funny as he answered. A rough translation of that might be, summer cages are cheaper during the winter, you dumb American. That is China. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. Our engineers include Ravi Karman, Chris Clark, Eric Johnson, Joel Stein, and Peter Stenzel. Next time on the program, you think you know what a sea turtle is? Tune in tomorrow for that and more about Chinese business culture. I'm Kai Rizdal. Xiexie Niman. Thanks for being with us. That's American Public Media, by the way.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.